Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken? A podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
Hi, this is Rebecca Witter calling from Buffalo, New York. My family of five back in late March of 2022, we were traveling, my husband and I, with our four-year-old, our three-year-old, and our one-year-old. And while we know that there is inherent risk traveling with young children, what we experienced at the Tampa airport in late March was just beyond the pale.
Very beyond. Rebecca's travel day began with a notification from Southwest Airlines that her family's flight would possibly be delayed. But it hadn't been canceled. So she, her husband, and those three little ones ventured to the Tampa, Florida airport.
We finally got to the airport. We were showing on-time flight. So we had checked our luggage, which included, as you can imagine, three car seats, a pack and play for the baby to sleep, and various other kid gear, along with returning our rental car. We sat in the terminal, which was overly crowded that day, for quite some time, and eventually we saw multiple delays starting to pile up, not only with our flight, but the flights around us.
Well, if you've been through an airport recently, you've witnessed the scene. Exhausted travelers standing in long customer service lines while also trying to get help over the phone, doing both for hours. That was Rebecca Witter, hours on the phone with Southwest. Supposedly, the delays were due to a thunderstorm passing through Tampa, but Rebecca says she was later told that Southwest had experienced a technical failure that morning that caused the delays.
I was really disappointed that they weren't more transparent with flyers that day, since from the first flight out of the day, things seemed to be going awry. You know, personally, what our family incurred was lack of food for the kids and nowhere to stay, and we ran out of formula for the baby, and we just literally had nowhere to go. So if for me as a mother of a young family, it was one of the most scared moments of my life, because I truly, my husband and I had no clue what to do that day.
Their delayed flight turned into a cancellation. It took 2 more hours to get their bags and car seats back. The Witters' one piece of good luck? A family member was willing to drive an hour and a half to pick them up at the airport and take them in. It was 4 more days before Southwest could accommodate them on flights home to Buffalo. So Rebecca is just one of the many, many, many listeners who called us with stories from the unfriendly skies. But people are still flying. In fact, demand is up. Airlines operated 26% more flights in March 22 than in March 2021. But up to consumer complaints, up 300% compared to pre-pandemic levels, according to the Department of Transportation. So we talked to the man who heads that department, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg.
The most important message that the flying public needs to hear is, we've got your back. Look, sometimes there's just a situation like a weather event that is going to cause cancellations and delays. But other times, these are issues that are within somebody's control. And we need to make sure that those issues are addressed so that we have fewer of these cancellations and delays in the first place. And then when cancellations and delays do happen, we're going to make sure that airlines meet their responsibilities to take care of you.
To be clear, the United States government has already taken care of the airlines. When the pandemic effectively shut down air travel in March of 2020, Congress quickly sent the airlines a $54 billion support package. As we noted, demand has since returned. Service levels have not. Cancellation rates and delays have been at record highs. By the way, Secretary Buttigieg suffered one of those cancellations. His flight, along with 1,400 others, vaporized off the departures board one Friday last month. Buttigieg is encouraged, though. The airlines performed better over the 4th of July holiday.
The cancellation rates were in the neighborhood of 3%. And that's still too high compared to what you would expect to see in a normal year. We know this isn't a normal year. Shockwaves from the pandemic are going through every part of the economy, including our aviation system. But these airlines, which received a lot of taxpayer funding to keep the system resilient, need to do their part. We're going to do our part.
Well, what does doing their part actually mean for the airlines, for airport authorities, for the agencies that regulate them? Because it seems like no matter how many dollars are shoveled into the airlines, ticket prices trend up and service quality trends down. Why does this keep happening with American air travel? Because those conflicting trend lines do not make for a resilient system. Well, today, Bill McGee joins us. He's a senior fellow for aviation and travel at the American Economic Liberties Project and author of Attention All Passengers, The Airline's Dangerous Descent and How to Reclaim Our Skies. Bill, welcome to On Point.
Hello, Macbeth. Thanks very much for having me on.
Have you ever seen as much focus on delays and cancellations in your history understanding the airlines as we're seeing now?
No, I've never seen a summer like this. And I've been around the airline industry for 37 years now. I started working in the airlines in 1985. I worked in airline flight operations. So I was in the belly of the beast. I was one of the people that canceled flights and rescheduled flights and consolidated flights. And then after 7 years in the airline industry, I started writing about the industry. And then for the last 13 years, I've been advocating on behalf of consumers. I've never seen a summer like this. I don't think anyone ever has, quite frankly. We're in uncharted territory here.
Okay. Take us into the belly of the beast, then. I would love to hear more about your experience, back in the 80s and the 90s. What actually happens when someone in your position has to cancel or delay flights? How does that work?
Sure. Well, it was about 35 years ago, but it seems like it was about 3,500 years ago in terms of how many changes there have been in the industry. It was a much different industry then, and there was much more of a focus on customer service. Now, I don't want to be someone who just, waxes poetic about the past and says the good old days. There were a lot of things wrong with the industry then as there are now. But I will tell you that what has happened over the last 20 years, driven largely by consolidation and mergers, we have a smaller airline industry now in 2022 than we have had at any time since the first airline ticket was sold in Tampa in 1914. We have an industry that is broken. There's no other way of saying it, but I think it's very critical for us to talk today, not just about how the airline industry is broken, but how the regulatory model is broken. The Department of Transportation, which oversees the industry, that model is broken. You just, we just heard from Secretary Buttigieg. He said that the DOT has our backs. I'm sorry, with all due respect, the DOT has not had passengers' backs. They have not had them for many years. And I'm happy to sort of dive into that. But in answer to your question, back in the day, it was a different model because, first of all, the aircraft were not as full as they are now, right? We are looking at what the industry calls load factors, the percentage of occupied seats on airplanes. We're looking to break all-time records that were set during World War II when the airlines were troop carriers. Planes are fuller than they've ever been. The system operates at peak capacity virtually 24/7 every week of the year now. That is not how transportation systems are designed. It's not how highways are designed. It's not how subways or trains or buses are designed. It's certainly not how airlines are designed. When I worked in the industry, the average loads system-wide for the whole industry were in the high 60s, low 70s. So, for every three seats, there was one that was unoccupied or more. Now, it's in the 90s.
Hang on. Yeah, can you hang on here for a second? And forgive me for interrupting, but I want to clarify one thing that you said earlier. When you said the industry is smaller than it's ever been before, you mean by in terms of numbers of companies operating because of the consolidation?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I just wanted people to be clear on that. But sure. We'll get to more about consolidation a little bit later. But we have heard from so many listeners about their experiences this summer and even in the spring. And I just want to share as many of their stories as we can. So this is Kim Cruz. She was traveling from Logan Airport in Boston back home to Gainesville, Florida.
My flight was delayed leaving Logan. The gate agent said that it was due to them not having a crew to clean the plane. So we sat around for a while instead of boarding, and then weather rolled in, which pushed us back, I don't know, another hour and a half. We were late taking off because the runway was closed for that period of time. Now, mind you, if they had cleaned the plane on time, we would have departed on time, and I would have made my connection in Hartsfield-Jackson Airport in Atlanta.
Now, that connection that she did not make also happened to be the last flight of the day from Atlanta to Gainesville.
So I was stranded in Atlanta, and the airline, which was Delta, said that it was not their fault because of the weather in the area in Logan. If they had cleaned the plane on time, we would have taken off on time, and I wouldn't have been stuck in the airport in Atlanta overnight, which was something I don't care to repeat anytime soon. So wish they were up to full staffing so that flights could run on time no matter what the weather might be doing.
Now, that's one of our listeners' story. We tried to understand or get a better understanding of why all these delays are happening. And so we reached out to Massachusetts Democratic Senator Ed Markey, who's been advocating for consumers, for air travelers for quite some time. And he says that the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee has some data that show airlines have control over more of the delays than they are suggesting publicly.
If the airlines have control over 40% of the delays for a four-month period, we should know what the airlines did to deal with those problems and how much information they gave to the consumer that there could be problems in enough time for the flying individual to make an alternative plan.
So, Bill McGee, we've got 30 seconds left in this first segment. Are the airlines accurately reporting how many delays and the causes of those delays?
I think there's very reasonable doubt about what the airlines are reporting. This is a very opaque industry. We're relying on the honor system for them to self-report their delays. And there's ample evidence that they are blaming weather and air traffic control for delays that are fully within their own control, particularly staffing issues.
Well, so we will talk about that when we come back, because this hour we're trying to understand why the American air travel industry is anything but resilient. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast. Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're trying to get at the root causes of the problems plaguing air travel this summer. And we're asking what, if anything, can be done to make the system resilient, as Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg says, resilient both for airlines and travelers as well. And I'm joined by Bill McGee. And Bill, before we move to staffing issues, let me ask you, I mean, all of these delays, record numbers of delays and cancellations, and you said that the airlines, there's reason to believe the airlines are not being entirely transparent about the number or causes, true causes of the delays. Now, is there anything that on this particular issue about the transparency that government, specifically Secretary Pete Buttigieg, could do.
Absolutely. There's no question. I mean, you and I don't know what goes on behind the screen. None of us do. As I said, this is a very opaque industry. They're opaque about pricing. They're opaque about customer service. They're even opaque in their contracts of carriage on what they'll do for you if there is a problem, such as a delay. Well, Pete Buttigieg has authority and power that we don't have. He has the ability to call the airlines in and ask them to open their books and explain what's going on. I mean, we really need to boil this down and say, what's happening? In fact, airlines are scheduling flights. They're putting flights into reservation systems. Consumers are going out and booking those flights, whether it's directly through the airline, by phone, online, through a travel agent, through Expedia, Orbitz, what have you. And they are paying money. They're having their credit card swipe. Money is being taken out of their accounts. It's being put into the airline's coffers. They're earning interest on it. And there is clearly reasonable doubt that all of these flights can be operated. Now, that's a very serious charge, to be offering a product for sale and taking money for it and not being able to provide it. That's what Pete Buttigieg has to do. He has to bring them to task for this and get the truth out of them. Because the airlines, every time you turn around, you see another media interview in which an airline representative or one of their lobbyists starts talking about weather and air traffic control. I'm an FAA licensed aircraft dispatcher. I worked in airline flight operations management. I can tell you there are always going to be problems with weather and air traffic control. And this time of year, with all of the hubs that we have in the Sun Belt, in Dallas and Atlanta and Miami, et cetera, Phoenix, of course, there are going to be thunderstorms and other weather issues that affect flight cancellations. But that is not what we're talking about in the summer of 2022. What we are looking at this year are circumstances that are way beyond weather and air traffic control. Mm-hmm. And it's incumbent upon Secretary Buttigieg to force them to be truthful, and then we can start talking about solutions. People could be asking me, you know, when are things going to get better? I don't see how they're going to get better at all if, in fact, we're not even truthful about what the root causes are.
Mm. Well, what you're saying, though, is that the Secretary of Transportation has the authority to demand that transparency, to get that data from the airlines?
No question. There's no question whatsoever. You know, the Secretary of Transportation, this needs to be put in context. He is the only sheriff for the airline industry. I won't get into a long history lesson, but it's critical to know that in 1978, when the airline industry was deregulated in the United States, a provision was included in the Deregulation Act called federal preemption. And what that meant was that the states have virtually no authority over the airline industry. Now, this makes the airlines, unlike virtually every other consumer-facing industry in the United States, if you have a problem with any company, you can sue in a state court. A state attorney general can take action against a company. A state legislature can pass laws for that state. That's not possible in the airlines. In the airlines, everything is on the federal level. So what are we left with? We're left with Congress. Well, okay, there are certain, you know, it's clear that there are certain issues there politically and time factors with Congress acting. And we're left with the Secretary of Transportation. So what we have is basically a benevolent dictatorship. I mean, this is not how democracy is supposed to work. And when the Secretary of Transportation fails to act, we've now had two consecutive Secretaries of Transportation who have not stood up and fought for consumers. One was Elaine Chao under President Trump. And now, 18 months in, Pete Buttigieg under President Biden, he has failed to act on a whole host of issues that I and other consumer advocates have spoken directly to him about. He's been in office for 18 months. He has not taken action at all on the refunds that are still outstanding. Senator Markey estimates between $10 and $15 billion, dating back to the early days of COVID. And he has not gotten this cancellation situation under control. That's just two of many issues.
Well, Bill, we're going to hear more from our conversation with Secretary Buttigieg a little later in this hour. But as you can imagine, this conversation is already getting a lot of response here. We've got a listener on Twitter, Glasshouse Floral, saying that staffing shortages and weather are two different issues. If you are fully staffed, sometimes weather will still have an impact on flights. Then equipment is not where it should be and delays ensue. The flying public needs to be aware and treat airline employees better. Behavior can be horrific. Well, I want to drill down more into the staffing part of the problem that that you had mentioned before, Bill, because it's one of the main tendrils of the root problem. As the pandemic surged, airlines, this is a couple of years ago, airlines opted, they actually opted to reduce the number of pilots on their payroll. And not just pilots, but other employees too. But we're going to focus for a moment on pilots because thousands of pilots were offered early retirement. In April 2020, 700 American Airlines pilots accepted early retirement packages, and nearly 5,000 pilots accepted voluntary leave offers. That's 5,000 of the nearly 15,000 pilots employed by American at the time, so a third of their flying corps. Well, Mike Richards is a pilot for a budget airline, Allegiant Air, and we talked to him while he was on a family vacation in Utah. It's his first vacation in more than 2 years, and Mike decided to take it, even as Allegiant is begging pilots to take on extra flights.
I think that's really where it is right now, right? Everybody wants to get out and go do something all at the same time. Just got an email that said that they went to our union and said, we want to pay you guys 300% to pick up anything more on your schedule. That's a lot, 300%. And they tried to say, this is your union's fault. They said, no. And the union said, we've been negotiating a contract now for a year and we've barely budged on anything. So we don't want to negotiate a little stopgap to get them through the summer. We want them to sit down and negotiate a real contract that's competitive with our peers and get that through. I don't want to sit down and waste my time just getting us through the summer. So I could tell that at least our management is concerned about the staffing levels and everything else. Several people have quit in the last few months. I know there's several more interviewing. So, you know, it's a difficult summer. For sure. What it appears is that when the pandemic started, a lot of very hasty decisions were made. I saw airplanes parked in several airports across the country. Kansas City had what seemed like an entire ramp filled with wide-body aircraft that weren't being used. And I'm sure there was a lot of panic and fear of, as far as when will things ever get better? How long will it take for anything to recuperate? Well, it recuperated quite quickly, and now your most senior and experienced pilots are retired. And, you know, you just exacerbated the problem of a shortage that was already at our doorstep. So in many cases, a lot of airlines, rather than furloughing and then having to recall, which would set off huge training problems. As soon as you go a certain amount of time without flying or operating or missing check rides or training events, you would have to go back in and requalify. Our airline did furlough. It lasted, I believe, a month or two, and then they recalled them. But yeah, I'm sure they regret that decision. When those pilots looked around and said, geez, nobody else furloughed, we did. Now that everybody's looking for pilots, well, there is that little bit of animosity where they said, why did this airline furlough me? You know, and they're applying elsewhere. So our airline is getting pinched by attrition very severely. And I think I read something that said 25% of our first officers, you know, left in the last year or more. So we're in the process. As we hire, we're barely keeping up with pilots that are leaving. With the supply and demand the way it is, it looks like the major airline contracts are very competitive, like very nice. And, you know, that's where guys are going to pursue. It makes things very tough for pretty much any other airline that wants to not just attract new, you know, pilots for future growth, but also retention. There's not going to be an easy fix to the pilot shortage. It's something that's been brewing now for, you know, 30 years or more. Like, there's been talk about it forever, And they've always found a way to push it off. And now they don't have very many ways of pushing it off. All of our airlines have merged and consolidated. We've raised the age once. I guess we could do it again. I love my company. I love, you know, the people I work with. But I don't know the attrition levels we're seeing. I don't know how they're sustainable.
That's Mike Richards. He's a pilot for Allegiant Air based in Orlando, Florida. Now, Bill McGee, in March of 2020, when it became clear that the pandemic was going to have a major impact on the United States, I looked back and found that there was a letter, I believe, written by the heads of the major airlines to Congress. Air travel was already falling significantly. And in this letter, the CEOs of the major carriers said time is running out, and that they would need massive funding to support the industry in order to, quote, ensure that we can save the jobs of our 750,000 airline professionals. That money came in the form of several stimulus packages totaling $54 billion, but still there's a pilot shortage, there's a mechanics shortage, there's a reduction in staffing seemingly in multiple places across the industry. How did that happen?
Well, that's a great question, Magna. And I think, you know, the pilot that we just heard from at Allegiant, he summed it up well. This is not an issue that goes back just to 2020 and the start of COVID. This is an issue that's been going on for decades. This is the United States with a population of over 300 million people, the country that invented the aircraft, that invented the airline industry. And we're being told repeatedly, if you read the aviation press for more than 10 years, we're being told there's a pilot shortage, there's a mechanic shortage. The best response I heard to that came from a pilot who said to me a few years ago, no, there isn't a pilot shortage in the United States. There's a shortage of pilots that want to work for less money than they could make at Wendy's. And the same goes for mechanics. I have written extensively. My book, Attention All Passengers, details in several chapters. I went all over the world looking at where U.S. airlines outsource their aircraft to be fixed. We're not talking about foreign airlines. We're talking about U.S. airlines to El Salvador and China and Singapore and Brazil. We have decimated the airline industry. There's a lot of blame to go around, certainly with the airlines, but also with the U.S. government that has allowed this to happen, particularly the Federal Aviation Administration, which, of course, is part of Secretary Buttigieg's DOT. So this is a crisis that has been decades in the making. And, you know, you could say that basically COVID was the tipping point. But you're right. I remember that letter very well. The airlines basically said to Congress, if you don't give us a bailout, you know, we're going to start, you know, laying off people right and left. So in that spirit, and I recall it very well because I myself, on behalf of a consumer organization, spoke to Congress and said, look, there's not even a question anymore of whether or not there'll be a bailout. After 9/11, there was a question about whether or not there would be. These days, we're way past the too big to fail marker. Some of us predicted in Congress when I testified 12 years ago on some of these mergers, I and others said we're approaching the too big to fail. We're there. It's already here. It's no putting the toothpaste back in the tube. So now it's just a given that if there's any kind of a major hiccup, the taxpayers will foot the bill. According to the New York Times, the $54 billion the airline industry got was as large as any industry got in terms of a bailout. Right. Mm-hmm. So that money was given with one single caveat. We, consumer advocates, said, well, if taxpayers are going to fund this, then let's have some provisions to protect consumers with refunds, things like that. Congress didn't do that. All they did was said one thing. Don't let your staffing, you know, become a problem. So what did they do? Well, they found a loophole, right? They may not have out and out laid people off in direct violation of the CARES Act, but they found a way to encourage early retirements. And now suddenly the airline industry is throwing its hands up in the air and saying, well, gee, we had no idea there was going to be pent up demand. It's been, you know, 18 months since the boosters were introduced. You know, they have entire departments at the major airlines that just do nothing but do forward thinking and mm-hmm. looking at, you know, at trends worldwide, anything you can imagine, terrorism, war, economics, you know, pandemics. And somehow this missed them. somehow they didn't realize that laying off, or rather, you know, excuse me, encouraging all these early retirements would lead to a pilot shortage. At the same time, there's tremendous demand.
Well, can I just jump in here for a second? Bill, yeah. Bill, I'll let you get to that note. But I just do want to put some more numbers around what you're saying. The Washington Post did a similar analysis, and they found that the carrier's workforce shrank by 42,000 full-time workers and 14,000 part-time workers by the time the payroll support program for the airlines had ended. Now, to be clear, again, these were quote-unquote voluntary reductions, right? Because the airlines were not allowed to involuntarily furlough or lay people off.
Right.
But, you know, I'm trying to be fair to the airlines. I'm trying to put myself back in, you know, their shoes in from March to December 2020. And was it clear that the rebound would come as quickly as it did? I mean, I was hearing that the airlines themselves were thinking it would take some 6 years for travel to come back. And they have admitted, I mean, the Southwest chief executive Gary Kelly last year said, you know, I underestimated that coming into this year, the rapidity of travel rebound. What do you think, Bill?
Well, I always try and be fair to the airlines too, but unfortunately they come up short far too often. Let's look at their actions in the days leading up to COVID and in the days after COVID. Let's look at the executive pay, which far from being cut, in fact, many executives of the U.S. airlines received bonuses at the same time taxpayers were bailing them out. Let's talk about the fact that not one single U.S. airline invested in pandemic insurance. And you know what? Why should they? Because they know that they have Congress. That's their form of pandemic insurance. Other airlines around the world, you know, had to worry about this. U.S. airlines don't, because they have the taxpayers when all else fails. And
well, Bill,
let's talk about the stock buybacks as well.
Well, we'll do that when we come back from this quick break. We're trying to get at the root causes of what's stopping the American airline industry from being truly resilient. Bill McGee is our guest today. We'll have more when we come back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and just want to let you know that on Friday, we're going to be talking about cryptocurrency. There are some polls that suggest as many as 1 in 5 Americans now own some crypto, but a staggering $1 trillion has been wiped from that market since the start of the year. So we want to hear from you. Have you invested in crypto? Have you mined for it? Are you out of the market now or holding on? Call us at 617-353-0683. Tell us your story and answer this question. Crypto is fill in the blank. And then tell us also, how do you think it works? Again, 617-353-0683 for our show on cryptocurrencies on Friday. Today, we are trying to get to the root causes of what's causing the woeful experiences of travelers this summer on U.S. airline carriers. I'm joined by Bill McGee. He's Senior Fellow for Aviation and Travel at the American Economic Liberties Project and author of Attention All Passengers, The Airline's Dangerous Descent and How to Reclaim Our Skies. And Bill, I just want to talk for another second about pilots, because we got this really interesting story from On Point listener Aaron from Baltimore, Maryland, who told us about what he saw on his recent flight.
I was on Southwest a little over a week ago, and there was not enough employees to do the luggage and loading it onto the plane. We were delayed for a considerable amount of time when the co-pilot comes out of the cockpit, gets off the plane, goes down, and starts loading stuff up himself with some of the supervisors. It made for a contentious time. Pretty good, because when he got back on, he got an applause. So kudos to him and Southwest.
Yeah, kudos to that co-pilot, but maybe ideally not what a co-pilot should have to do, leave the airplane to help load luggage. Now, Bill, we talked about the decisions that the airlines made to offer all those quote-unquote voluntary leave and early retirement packages. So that's an acute decision that deserves scrutiny. But there's also longer-term issues regarding staffing, particularly with pilots, because I'm seeing that a huge percentage of them are approaching the mandatory retirement age. And that's something that I'm sure the airlines have seen is a long time coming. So this shortage is going to last for a long time, even if the current numbers rebound, isn't it?
There's no question, Meghna. Yeah, I mean, obviously, the pipeline for a position as critical as a pilot is quite lengthy, as well it should be. You know, the training and getting everybody up to speed. When I hear people say, well, is this going to be straightened out by Labor Day? I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but there's no way that this situation is going to be straightened out by Labor Day. That's why it's so critical that we start having some honest discussions about what's going on here. At American Economic Liberties Project, we're saying that now is the time for a national discussion about a broken industry and a broken regulatory model. I spoke before about how the DOT secretary is the only sheriff that consumers have. Well, it goes deeper than that. You know, the DNA of the Department of Transportation and some of its predecessor organizations that have overseen the airline industry, and especially the FAA, which oversees safety, it's baked into the DNA to not only regulate these industries, but to promote it. Many of us, of course, feel that those are two very conflicting objectives. You know, the FDA doesn't go out and tell people to, you know, drink milk or eat cheese, right? They regulate, you know, food preparation. But in the airline industry, there's this long history of what they call a dual mandate. I mean, as recently as the Obama administration, the FAA's website on the homepage, where there was a mission statement, it referred to airlines as the FAA's customers. This speaks to how broken the whole system is. The customers for the FAA, for a government agency, are you and me. They're the flying public and the taxpayers. We are calling on a reexamination of everything that has gone wrong with the airline industry since 1978, when it was deregulated. It is clear that deregulation has failed in the airline industry from any perspective you want, from a pricing perspective, customer service, from a labor perspective, from a safety perspective. And so we're looking at solutions at American Economic Liberties Project. We're calling on some of the best minds out there. And we're not saying we have all the answers, but we're saying we need a new model. This model is broken. And,
Can I just jump in here for a second?
Sure.
Has this model brought about something that we previously heard about, the banking system? Are the three major carriers right now, American, Delta, and United, are they too big to fail because of all the consolidation that's happened?
Oh, there's no question. You know, as I indicated, I mean, I testified 5 times in the House and Senate against these mega mergers when the big six became the big three, United and Continental, Delta and Northwest, and American and U.S. Airways. And many of us were saying we're approaching the too big to fail level. But like I said, we're there now. We have never in the history of the U.S. airline industry had such concentration. The four largest, if you throw Southwest in with the other three, they control about 85% of the market along with their regional partners, which is another big problem. And so we've never had that. We've never had that in the history of the industry. We also have never had so few carriers in the history of the industry in this country. And most disturbing, one of the key tenets of deregulation in 1978, one of the major promises was that we were going to see new entrants. We were going to see new blood. We were going to see new carriers. And for a while we did in the 80s, until the majors and sort of squashed a lot of that competition. We just had a period up until last year, from 2007 to 2021, we had a 14-year period between Virgin America and the two new airlines that started last year, where for 14 years, there was not one new single passenger airline, scheduled airline in the United States. We have never had a 14-year period ever, even in the regulated era, when the quote was that the barriers to entry were too high. So now the barriers to entry don't come from a government regulatory agency. They come from Wall Street. They come from the industry itself. This is a broken industry, and it is time to rethink deregulation. It is time to rethink how the industry is regulated. And so in the coming weeks and months, we'd love to share with you some of the ideas that we're exploring right now.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll have time at least to hear one or two of those ideas today, Bill. But a major player that could help do this rethink is someone you've mentioned multiple times already in this show, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. Now, you heard a little bit of our conversation with him earlier. Here's more of what he had to say about what he thinks the federal government could do.
We're very happy to see the demand come back. We're looking to the airlines to make sure that they can support that demand on the tickets they sell. We'll do our part, both as an operator with the air traffic system and as a regulator here to support consumers whenever they have a problem.
So Secretary Buttigieg tells us he is in regular contact with airline officials. He talked to them about that disastrous Memorial Day and Juneteenth holiday set of weekends when thousands of flights were delayed or canceled.
The bottom line is that you need to be ready to service a route when you're selling a ticket and collecting revenue on it. Now, one of the things that I talked to the airlines about after Memorial Day was realistic scheduling. And we did see several airlines take steps to cut back on scheduled flights so that they knew that the flights they do have on the schedule, the tickets they are selling, they're going to better be able to support.
But what about accusations that we heard a little earlier that airlines are scheduling flights when they know in advance they do not have adequate numbers of employees to staff them?
So that's a difficult thing to be able to determine from the outside looking in. But if they have, and if that's ever proven, then our Consumer Protection Department is going to have something to say about that. In the meantime, where we have caught airlines, for example, failing to provide refunds, where people are entitled to refunds for canceled flights, we're acting on that. We actually used our enforcement powers to secure the largest fines ever for this sort of thing a few months ago. And we'll continue using those powers when we need to.
Now, Bill McGee, I can probably guess you're gritting your teeth right now because you had just told us earlier in the show that Pete Buttigieg, as Transportation Secretary, could demand the data to find out if airlines are scheduling flights that they know they can't staff. But one more thing from Buttigieg, because the airlines have said that they're pointing to the FAA, which falls under the Transportation Department, as part of the problem and staffing issues at the FAA. Airlines for America, an industry trade group, claims that some of the delays are caused by those staffing issues, not at the airlines, but at the Federal Aviation Administration, and Buttigieg disagrees.
So I want to be clear that FAA staffing issues do not explain the majority of cancellations or delays in the system. But like any organization, FAA was impacted by the pandemic. As you can imagine, environments like training and air traffic control don't lend themselves to remote work or social distancing very well. And they're working through some issues that we're also in close communication with the airlines about how to sort out, repositioning resources where needed.
That's Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, and we have more of our conversation, or we'll have more of our conversation with the secretary, and I'm going to put that in our podcast feed, the On Point podcast feed, so check it out wherever you listen to your podcasts. Okay, Bill McGee, in that exchange, you can hear that Secretary Buttigieg was rather focused on sort of those issues of this moment. But as you've laid out pretty clearly, this is a problem that has been decades in the making. And I just want to quickly run through some bullet points and then ask, what should we do about it? We have decades of consolidation, as you mentioned. We have staffing issues that have been years in the making. We have the issue of carriers closing hubs, for example. We have the fact that I think every carrier, as far as I can see, has at least gone through bankruptcy once. We have what you said a little earlier, that unlike in the 80s and 90s, carriers are running their airplanes as full as they can, basically 24-7. They're running at, quote-unquote, rush hour 24-7. There's no slack in the system. So when I put the too big to fail plus the no slack in the system together, I see a system right now that is built for anything but resiliency, right? It is a system that's incapable of being resilient at any time. So in the last couple of minutes that we have, what are one or two of the ideas that you and the American Economic Liberty Project have that could create that supposedly more resilient system that Pete Buttigieg keeps talking about?
Right. Well, and I was trying not to let you hear my teeth grinding, Megan. But having said that, some of the things that the secretary was saying there were just not completely accurate. And I can say that because I've been on the front lines since the first day of COVID fighting for refunds. He talked about record fines. Let me just be very clear. There has not been a single dollar fine against any U.S. airline on refunds. The DOT fined Air Canada only because Air Canada publicly thumbed its nose at the DOT and said it wouldn't give refunds, and so the DOT fined them. They fined them $25.5 million, and it was later negotiated down by lawyers to $2 million. I know I'm a broken record on this. This is a broken system, and it's clear that the Secretary of Transportation, you know, when he's saying things like, "Well, we don't know what's going on," well, he's the one person in America who can know what's going on. He can demand that these airline CEOs come into his office and show them their books on these operations. And if they don't have enough staffing, then they shouldn't be operating. So, you know, we went from a model prior to 1978 where there was strict regulation of the industry under the Civil Aeronautics Board, and the government set fares and flight schedules. And, you know, from both the left and the right, there was this consensus in 1978 to say, well, no, let's let the free market do it. Well, the free market has failed the American public and the American taxpayer. You don't even have to fly in order to have been failed by the airline industry, because your tax dollars are failing you via the industry. We are saying that it's time for a new regulatory agency. The DOT, it's depending on who's in office, at its best, it can sort of make some changes around the margins. We've had past DOT secretaries like Raymond LaHood who have taken some actions that are pro-consumer, and credit to them. But I can tell you, the DOT is mired, it's frozen in its inaction on issues like refunds, on issues like flight cancellations, on issues as simple as not allowing four-year-old autistic children to sit by themselves on airplanes without having their families charged. In 2016, the family seating provision was included in a bill by Congress 6 years ago. Through two administrations, through two secretaries of transportation, Elaine Chao and Pete Buttigieg, we're still waiting for the DOT to tell airlines to stop charging families with children under 13 to sit together. We're talking about autistic kids. We're talking about the threat of sexual assault. We're talking about children that are sitting by themselves during emergency evacuations during COVID. If this is a broken regulatory model, and what we're recommending is that there be a new agency, not the DOT, that has, you know, baked into its DNA the idea of promoting the industry, a new regulatory agency to take a fresh look at regulating the airline industry in the United States.
Well, so, Bill, hang on for one second, because I just want to say that the broken regulatory model is also dovetailed with a broken Congress, because Senator Markey, for example, told us that he introduced maybe this is the same bill, but a similar bill back in 2017 with some very basic consumer protections in it, passenger bill of rights, as he calls it, like really basic stuff. And there's been no vote on it at all in 5 years. So, you know, I hear you when an entirely new regulatory model needs to be perhaps considered. I'm a little skeptical on how we might bring that about in our current political system. But in the last 30 seconds that we have, in addition to that, I'm still taken by the too big to fail problem with the airlines. Is breakup a possibility, or will that not work in the aviation industry?
Well, I think it's a great conversation to have. There's no question. I mean, I think, you know, what we're looking at here is, as I said, consolidation, the likes of which we've never seen before. So we need to look at the fact that four airlines basically control the American economy, even the American defense. This is a national resource. It's a public utility, but it is being treated as a free market enterprise. And so airline executives make decisions that are good for them and their shareholders, but the rest of us are dependent on this industry. That's why we give them the bailouts.
Well, Bill McGee, senior fellow for aviation and travel at the American Economic Liberties Project and author of Attention All Passengers, The Airline's Dangerous Descent and How to Reclaim Our Skies, thank you so much. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices. And they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons. And there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.